But you haven't seen that from Republican leaders. Very few of them are accepting those results. So what happens? I mean, you can talk about that all you want, but they're not doing it.
Well, I think they're getting ready to do it. I've said I think this is a character test for the Republican Party. I don't buy the argument that Donald Trump has hypnotized Republican voters or that they're not capable of accepting the truth. This is a myth that's being perpetrated that's simply not true. But it requires people to explain what happened. The Trump campaign simply has no evidence. Their basic argument is this was a conspiracy so vast and so successful that there's no evidence of it. Now, if that's true, I really want to know who the people are who pulled this off. We need to hire them at the CIA. The fact is, this is all blue smoke and mirrors. And I think people will accept that if they see leaders they respect explain it to them.
Probably not those voters I talked to.
First things Monday, November 16th, David Domke, you subjected me to John Bolton.
Today, November 16th, is also the new phase of several important things. So I thought John Bolton would be the first place we should go. Because, he's the only one speaking logic on the Republican side. And when we're in that space, we're in a really dangerous world.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So first up, November 16th, Monday, it's not freezing outside. So that's the quick weather update. That's positive. The plan for Charles and me on these podcasts was to go through November 15th, October 15th to November 15th, thinking that that would get us through the election and through the transition to the post-election phase. It's definitely done that, but it's apparent that we need to keep going with these, that these are important kind of daily touch points for our community and Common Power. They help us to kind of like make sense of things that are going on. So I'm gonna keep doing these through, at least through the Georgia runoffs. But I might go all the way to Inauguration Day. And I'm going to try to do these daily or as close to daily as possible. Charles is going to periodically do final thoughts in that span of time. But he's got a lot of other things on his plate late at night, including, a 6-month-old, all kinds of things. So I'm going to keep doing it on my morning walks. So John Bolton,
he did say he might drop by in the morning every once in a while, though, when I talked to him the other day.
Okay, good. So he might swing in. That's great, because he definitely gets up early. It's just that until he gets 4 shots of coffee in him, it takes him a little bit of time to get going. Bolton is the useful person for this phase from November 16th forward, because this week is the week at which shit starts getting real in terms of the post-election phase. We call it phase 3 of our Common Power election season. And phase 3 is about certifying the votes. It's about confirming the votes across this country. And we're pressuring elected officials to do just that with our advocacy initiative. So some of you are doing the advocacy work. It's on our advocacy tab on our homepage of Common Power. And what we do in that is we're contacting the governor, the election official, who's usually the Secretary of State, and the 2 U.S. senators in each state. We're contacting them through phone calls, through Twitter, through emails. And we have a script that's right there asking those officials to do the right thing, to count the votes, to be transparent about it, and to certify the votes, which is the official kind of legal language for confirming that these are the correct outcomes. We're doing that right now. We're pushing those elected officials. And the certification process this week heats up. So I want to talk about why that advocacy work is so important and the certification process this week on what we will call our continuing education podcast. Okay.
Oh, is that what we're going to call this now? I like it.
It's not the most sexy title, but that's what this really is. Continuing Education Podcast.
Do we get credit?
We totally do. You and I, we're getting paid a lot for this, especially too, okay? That's what this feels like to me, is continuing education, where you keep learning things each day that you're like, well, I did not know that's how it worked, or that's interesting, or that's a problem. So the way it works is every state controls their elections in this country. That's both problematic in many ways, and also adheres very closely to the notion of states as part of a broader republic. And so states have this control over their elections. And every one of them has language either in their constitution or in their statutes that speaks to the certification of votes, which is, again, the official confirmation of the vote outcomes in an election. Most of the states, not all of them, but most of the states say have a specific date when that certification has to occur. It's like 2 weeks after Election Day. It's 3 weeks after Election Day. It's something like that. We're at that portion of my walk where I'm walking past. I'm working on the house. So hammering. And we already have 10 states that have certified in this country. They've already done it. This week, we start to get the bigger states, the more important ones. So certification, again, is the statement by the election officials in each state of the election outcomes that they're legally, they're confirming it, they're like signing the affidavit and all of that. We're trying to make sure that they do this with transparency and with integrity in this country. Today is Virginia. Monday, November 16th, is Virginia, a state that used to be a red state, that became a swing state, and is now a reliably blue state at the presidential, at the Senate, at the governor's levels. Today is Virginia. Tomorrow is Florida. Wednesday is Massachusetts. Friday is Georgia. Next Monday is Pennsylvania. These are the deciding states of this election right now. If Biden gets certified in those states alone, in Virginia and Massachusetts, and then in the crucial swing states of Georgia and Pennsylvania in this election, then the certification puts him over the top of 270 in these key states. We need to keep pushing our advocacy initiative in the key states of Georgia and Pennsylvania. We're working there. We're also working still in Wisconsin and Michigan, Alaska, and North Carolina. And what we're doing, again, is pushing the elected officials in all those states to count all the ballots and to make sure that they do it with transparency and integrity in those states, and then to certify appropriately. So this state, this week, we got to make sure we push all the way through, keep the pressure on, and make sure the certification process happens correctly.
And y'all make it easy for us, because the scripts are there on the webpage, on the homepage, and we can modify them. And then the addresses are there for the people that we can contact.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is actually the easiest thing that we ask people to do. It's much easier than contacting the voters. What you're doing is you're contacting elected officials. You usually don't talk to them. In fact, you almost never talk to them. If you talk to anybody, you talk to their staff. But even that, we don't usually get them. We usually just get voicemails if we call, or Twitter responses from somebody who handles our Twitter feed. Or we get email responses from a staff member. So we don't usually talk to folks. What we're doing is leaving messages. And what these staffers do and their offices is they pay attention to the volume of contacts on an issue. And it can make a difference. It can really matter. We did this for our advocacy work around absentee balloting in the spring, and we got absentee ballot or increased access to voting in COVID, the COVID world, in 23 out of the 27 states that we worked on. So it can really, really make a difference, this kind of pressure. Let's take one example of this right now in the great state of Georgia. Have you happened to notice this little internal conflict that's going on between the Secretary of State and the Republican leadership in the state?
Yeah, I have noticed that, yes.
Yes, what have you seen?
I initially, the two senatorial candidates basically accusing him of being a terrible administrator and allowing fraud to occur. And that was echoed by some other people in the various parties. But what I've seen is the guys stay pretty cool about it all. And like most secretaries of state, right, they seem to operate in their own, not all of them, of course, but they operate in their own sort of level of, I'm here to maintain the integrity of the office. And I think he has maintained that argument, though he did agree to a hand count.
I think the hand count actually is part of the story. So in the state of Georgia, they have long had Republican control in the state for at least the last couple of decades. And he is a Republican Secretary of State. There is a Republican governor who was the former Secretary of State, Brian Kemp, who certainly manipulated the election laws to his advantage in 2018.
Right. He was one of my examples of the outliers. The other one in Kansas, I think. A couple of outliers in how they viewed their office.
Yeah, sure. Chris Kobach in Kansas, of course, you're referring to. These were rogue, damaging to democracy secretaries of state. Kemp won in 2018 on the basis of his laws. But the next Republican, this guy Brad Raffensperger, ran for Secretary of State. It was a very close election because of Stacey Abrams got the governor's race and all the races really close. And eventually went to a runoff, the Secretary of State. And Raffensperger won 52-48 in a runoff, which is pretty good for the Democrats in a runoff in Georgia. We got to do better than that this time. That's a different topic we've been talking about getting turnout. But Raffensperger won pretty narrowly. He, as part of that election, Fair Fight Action, which is Stacey Abrams' organization, Fair Fight and Stacey Abrams sued the state about a set of practices that Kemp had put in place as Secretary of State. And they got what's called a consent decree agreed to by the state legislature, the Republican legislature, about elections, which is that that there are certain protocols now in place for how ballots get counted and which ones can be rejected as part of voting. These all work to the advantage of a more just and inclusive democracy, we think, that came out of this. And one of the pieces in that consent decree is that there would be a paper ballot for every vote. There would not just be machine votes. There would be a paper ballot. So the ability to do a hand recount with paper ballots is only even possible in the state of Georgia for the first time in decades now because of that consent decree. So I think Raffensperger said, fine, you think that I somehow cheated or did a poor job here, all you Republicans, we'll just do a hand recount so that everybody can see the votes. So that's what they're doing right now. And the story in the Washington Post yesterday just noted that about a third of all the counties are now done with the hand recounts, and the total number of votes that are changing is in the single digits. So it's you know, it's going to remain strong Biden state by 14,000 votes. Raffensperger, I think, is kind of plodding through, PLODDING, not plotting, plodding through the kind of techniques and methods that he has as Secretary of State. Doing like, okay, we'll do a hand recount, and then if you want to have another recount after that, what that is a special kind of machine recount, we'll do that. The president is not happy. The Republican senators are not happy because as part of the consent decree, one thing that cannot happen is you cannot throw out ballots on the basis of signatures in the state. The kind of ability to match or not match those. That no longer can be done as easily as it was done before. So you can do it, but it's a much more laborious process now. That works to the advantage of all citizens because study after study has shown that signature rejections overwhelmingly target lower income voters and people of color. So the reality is that the consent decrees are working to the advantage of a just and inclusive democracy. We dig that. Raffensperger says, look, I didn't put these in place. I'm just adhering to these. That's my job. And these Republicans are getting more and more mad at him every day. Well, we are contacting Raffensperger as one of our contacts in that state. We're also contacting Brian Kemp, the governor, who's the number two worst governor in the country. He's right behind Ron DeSantis of Florida. But Kemp is also being fairly reasonable about this. He is not attacking Raffensperger in the same way that Perdue and Loeffler, the two Senate candidates are, or the president is. So I think that our pushing on Kemp and Raffensperger is not a determinative force by any means, but it's part of an ecosystem in which they are hearing from hundreds, thousands of people about what the right thing to do is as an elected official, the right thing to do. And in this world, even one click, let alone two clicks separated from the president or from Loeffler and Perdue, is a really valuable electoral space for us to have leaders in. So we need to keep pushing on them to let them know that this is the right thing to do and that they need to adhere with integrity to the legal process. This week, certification. Friday is Georgia.
And we're on the same side as John Bolton. That is a new world.
Bolton. You can see I'm lost for words here. Bolton, ideologically, we're not on the same side. Not politically, not even close. He's a war kind of a drum beater. He's somebody who really strongly adheres to a certain perspective on the use of military force in the world. But he also is somebody who does seem to deal with reality in a certain way. And that is a defining characteristic right now. Someone who adheres to it, who thinks it's serious, it's real, that there is a real reality. So Bolton's message on ABC News on Sunday, that there is no basis for this fraud claims by the president, that it's all blue smoke and mirrors, that it's a conspiracy that is so good that there's nobody who was part of it, is a message that we can work with, a message that at this time and day is part of pushing the president, Loeffler, Perdue, along a continuum towards accepting and certifying ballots. So to me right now, Bolton is doing the country a service with this perspective. I don't want him anywhere near government in terms of policy, but I do want him voicing this perspective. Now, one last thing on Raffensperger, Bolton et al., who are pushing this perspective. Raffensperger went on Facebook last night and responded point by point to these claims of fraud and his mismanagement of the vote in Georgia. So here's the Secretary of State going on Facebook. He screen captured and screenshotted presidential tweets, claims by Perdue and Loeffler, and went through them one by one about how they're wrong and how they also are bad for democracy. I frankly can't believe this. I can't believe this, but it is something that we periodically see. We see the Ohio governor standing up and saying, President-elect Joe Biden is gonna be the next president. We see folks saying these things like Bolton, Raffensperger, folks that wouldn't normally do it. And we need to be there advocating to support them, to push them to do this. It is something we can do. So this is the week it all gets real in the certification process. This is something I've never paid attention to before, but now is essential because this is what it takes. Talked about that yesterday. This is what it takes. It takes diligence, attention, determination, and action all the way through.
All right.
Today's November 16th. Yep, today's November 16th. We still got a couple months to go. till Inauguration Day.